So today we are going to do something a little different, and I am not going to preach today. I wanted to just have a bit of a conversation, and so today is just really more of a chat. It's going to be interactive. I'm going to ask you questions, and you're going to be able to say some stuff. For some of you, you are going to want the notes, and there are QR codes lying on the floor. There are a couple floating around. You could scan that, and it's going to give you all the slides that are up there. So you don't need to do that now. But I want to go through and just help us with a little thinking. We've just come through elections, and it was a miracle. I want to tell you, it was an absolute, absolute miracle. And newspaper articles that came out yesterday, and I'll include some of them in the newsletter just so that you can have a read, is that they're attributing it to faith. They're saying this was the Christian lobby. They're saying this was a faith thing. They're saying that there was too much opposition against religious freedom, and the nation rose up and said, no, we're not having it. And so, I mean, this is a secular newspaper that's writing this stuff, and I think you're going to find it interesting to be able to read it and just see what's busy happening. Today, I have been challenged by some of that and how it affects us and how we think about it, and I want to take you through a bit of a process and help you to work through some stuff that I hope is going to be good in terms of where we go. So I need to click, says Joe, look at that. Is that fancy pants or what? And so today I want to speak to you about worldviews and metacognition. And you say, wow, isn't that a fancy word? It's a great word. Do yourself a favor, once a month, learn a new word and then throw it out. It makes you look intelligent. It's the most incredible thing. I learned this word about 5 years ago. And every time I feel as though I'm really stupid in a meeting, I say, it's a little like metacognition. And everyone looks at me and goes, wow, we don't know what that means, but it obviously is important. It really is. So metacognition is thinking about our thinking. Okay, thinking about our thinking. So in other words, is that we think in certain ways, and today, we want to talk a little about why we think that way. Okay, there is a way of thinking, and we're going to think about why we think that way. Worldview is more about what makes me Christian. And so the question is, what makes me Christian? And what makes me Christian in the world that we find ourselves in today? In other words, in the world that we're living in right now, what makes me different from the person who sits in the cubicle or the office or the shop floor? What makes me different to them? Do I work harder? And so we can think, oh, well, as a Christian, I work harder than they do. Well, guaranteed I'm going to find somebody who can work harder than you do. You say, well, I'm nicer. And you can be the nicest, most godly person. I bet you I can find an unsaved person who's nicer than you are. You say, well, I'm more committed. I bet you I can find somebody who's more committed to you than you are who's not Christian. So what makes us different as Christians? Why are we different? And is that difference showing? And we're going to get stuck into that. So let's go. First slide. What is a worldview? The worldview is the internal story that shapes how we live. It shapes our Christianity. And so when we speak about a worldview, we're going to talk a little about today a biblical worldview. And even in that, I'm going to show you some things that are very interesting and how they play out. But in this worldview, it says that every one of us has a lens that we put on that helps us to interpret the world. So, let's take a couple of examples, and let's go from the simplest to the most complicated. So, how many of you are top rollers? Top rollers. Okay, let me explain. You've got to have an explanation for this. When you go to the loo and you replace the toilet roll, Which one? Does it have to come out the top or does it have to come out the bottom? Top. Are we all top rollers? All agree? Who's a bottom roller? There's a bottom roller. Okay. Well, obviously, we all agree to be Christian, you have to be a top roller. So, come on now, be honest. Okay, this is, let's just put it all out there. How many of you go into somebody's guest bathroom and it's the wrong way around and you change it for them? Come on. Yes. Oh, we have some that are honest amongst us. Why do we do that? Why do we do that? Because we have a worldview. We have a way that thing must happen. There's a right and a wrong, and it must happen that way. So, how do we bring up our kids? How do we bring up our kids? And this one, we're not going to ask for hands because it's going to incriminate you in the modern Australia. How many were spankers and how many were non-spankers? Ah, don't put up your hands. No. Spankers and non-spankers. Are we Christian, non-Christian? Are the spankers Christian and the non-spankers non-Christian? Yeah, you see, we have a worldview. We have a way that we interpret that we believe is right. Should we read Harry Potter as Christians? And all of those that love Harry Potter are going, what? What's wrong with Harry Potter? I love Harry Potter. Of the devil. But it's lovely. And so we have within our own congregation a worldview. We have a way of interpreting our own world, even though we're all Christian. So I read this story, and it's about a couple, Gardner and Ingrid. And Gardner and Ingrid, an American couple, okay, story that's written up, and they had problems with fertility. And so they'd gone to a fertility clinic, and they had embryos. Harvested. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. And so they now had these embryos. And so they had two children out of these embryos. And then 5 years, I forget my exact timing. 5 years later, the fertility clinic calls them and says, we still have 3 embryos. What are you going to do with them? And so they have to make a decision because effectively those are children. And so are they going to flush them down the toilet? Are they going to let them survive? Or are they going to donate them to science? And the two of them could not agree. And this thing has almost ripped their marriage apart. Why? Because they have different worldviews. And so while in some ways it's an easy one where we say it's a top roller or a bottom roller, but in the same way we have a worldview about what should happen to an embryo. And I guarantee you that as Christian as we are and as biblical as we like to think we are, we would not reach agreement and consensus in this room if we are to have a discussion about this issue. And so today, I want to take you on a little journey about how that starts to form and what it looks like. So let's talk about a friend, Francis Schaeffer. I love the stories about Francis Schaeffer. Francis Schaeffer was a thinker. And so he was a theologian and a philosopher and just an all-time good guy. There's one story I love about Francis Schaeffer. He went along to a conference, and he always looked a bit like that, you know, kind of a little disheveled. And he went along to this conference in India, and he arrived pretty late at night. and he was the main speaker. And so there were thousands of people who had come from all over the world to come and hear Francis Schaeffer. And he arrived pretty late in the evening. And when he arrived, he said, "Hi, I'm Francis Schaeffer." But the guy who was busy organizing didn't recognize him and didn't recognize his name. And so said to him, "This is a fine time to arrive." And he said, "I'm terribly sorry." And they said, "Well, we have accommodation for all the delegates coming to the conference, but we don't have any accommodation left. We have none for you. But what I'm going to do is I have a grass mat and you can sleep on the floor." And he said, "Thank you. I'm just so grateful. Thank you very much." And so they took a grass mat, put it in a corner, and Francis Schaeffer slept on the floor. And the next morning, they got up and they said, "Has anyone heard from Francis Schaeffer? He's our main speaker." And then the guy dawned and he said, "He's sleeping in the corner on a grass mat." And in an Indian culture, that is just the most horrendous thing that could ever happen. Francis Schaeffer was just happy. He had a bed and he was quite cool with it. This is what he says. He says, "All people have a worldview. And nobody, whether ditch digger or professional thinker, can live without one." And so you and I have a worldview. We have a way of interpreting the world. We have lenses that we have. And we look through those lenses to be able to see the world. And so, he wrote a book, by the way, called How Then Shall We Live? And it is heavy reading. Just let me tell you straight up, it's one of those books where you're not going to take it and read it while you're lying in bed. Okay, it's tough going. There's an easier book that was written years later, How Now Shall We Live? And that was written by Chuck Colson. And Chuck Colson, I think, died 2 years ago. He was the guy who was involved in the Watergate scandal, ended up in prison, got saved in prison, came out, ran prison ministries. That's a great book to read. If you're wanting to understand how we think and worldview, and he tells really interesting stories, old Chuck Colson, so I would encourage you to read that. But there's a biblical story versus other stories, and so you and I are hearing those stories. There are all sorts of stories. Let's talk a little about some of those stories that are very prevalent in our culture today. Think of some of those stories. What are some of those stories? And here's the clue. The clue is they usually end with isms. They usually end with isms. So let me give you one as an example. Humanism. Humanism. Humanism says, "I am all important as a human. In other words, I was created this way. It is about me and my humanity and the way that I live my life. I'm given choice. I'm to live the way I want to live." And you may say, "Wow, that is so contrary." No, no, no. Be very, very careful. There's Christian humanism, and Christian humanism is a denomination of its own. And you say, I would never fall for that. I would see it coming. I would so see it coming. Sharon and I and Andre were in a church where there was a very, very intelligent, prominent man who was a doctor, very, very clever man, very, very clever, and one day sat down with us as an eldership and said, "I cannot be in this church any longer because of the stuff that you preach. I am a Christian humanist. I'm a Christian humanist. In other words, I am a Christian, but I believe it's all about me and my humanity, and I'm going to embrace that and lift the church." You say, "Oh, never, I would never let that happen." That's a story. So what other stories are there? Come on, think of some. What are some of the other stories? Feminism. 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 Hey, that's a story. This story that says women are not treated equal, women earn less, women have been discarded in the workplace. In fact, they've been downtrodden for many, many years, and in many ways, they're right. They're right. So we now embrace feminism, and what does that do? we now start to swing it the other way around. So the only way to correct it is women must be given rights, they must be given privileges, they must be uplifted, and men must be pushed down so that we can bring more equality into the system. And that story is all over. It's all over. You know what? I sit in boardrooms often, and in boardrooms, you can make all sorts of jokes. You can make jokes about men. You can make jokes about men who are stupid, men who think they're the best, men who earn more. You can make jokes about those things. Do not joke about a lady. It is totally politically incorrect in the world that we live in. It's a story. It's a story. What other stories are there? Racism. Racism is a story. Racism is a story. Yeah. And so what do? We try to bring balance and shift and try and think about it differently. Is racism right? No. No. But the story can become an overwhelming story. And so I'm amazed that in nations, including the nation I came from, we can go and Christians will joke about racism. Christians. I'm not talking about the unsaved. I'm talking about the Christians will joke about racism. What's our worldview? What other stories are there? Individualism. Yeah, individualism. Individualism is all about me. It's all about me. And so it becomes a militant thing of, I have rights. I have a way that I should live. Sharon and I went for our citizenship exam many, many years ago. And I don't remember any of this stuff, sadly. I should know. But the thing we had to do an exam on was our rights and our privileges. Our responsibilities, sorry. Our rights and our responsibilities. We had to know what our rights were. And it's a rampant individualism that says, I have rights. I have rights. And sadly, that thing finds its way into Christianity, where we say, I have rights. As a Christian, I have rights. Yeah, yeah. What other stories are there? Environmentalism. Environmentalism. Yeah, environmentalism. Let me tell you a quick story. I get so distracted, you know. And I'm going to try and stay on track. Environmentalism. We're busy building an extension, okay? Part of that extension is a 49-bay car park. Just on the corner, 49 bays, we put it in. And so the council arrived and said, we're not happy with the 49 bays being built because we want the runoff to be filtered. So we said, beg your pardon? So they said the runoff water that comes off those 49 bays must go into a filtration plant, and you must filter that water before you release it. And we were like, you're kidding me? Do you do that? The rainwater. We were saying, do you do that on the roads? In other words, the runoff on the roads, do you filter that water? And they went, no, we don't. But this is not about the roads. This is about your car park. So we said, but hold on a moment. Do you do that at the shopping center down the road? And they said, no, we don't. But we've got to start somewhere, and yours is the one we should start with. So we said, so we're going to filter the water that runs off the car park that's going into the ground. And they went, yeah, you've got to do that. So we said, no. So, I mean, we had a consultant who was dealing with this stuff for us, and he just said, no, we're not going to do it. We'll go to court on this one. And so they said, okay, well, let's think about that. We don't really want to go to court. Okay, half. Half of the bays must be filtered. So the consultant said, no, we're not doing it. We'll go to court on half. So they said, we don't know. Okay, we're not compromising on this one. This is our final offer. 2% of the bays, two bays must be filtered. So we paid $3,500 to build a filtration plant to filter the water off two car bays, which will now be released into the environment. I want to tell you, we are environmentally responsible. 2%. I was like, are you serious? Are you kidding me? Environmentalism becomes our story. There's a story that's on the headlines at the moment. Just once a week, it's on the headlines. What is it? Climate change. Yeah, it is. And that's part of the environmentalism. There's another one. The vegans. Yeah, the vegans. And so when we read that, what we do is we read it and we go, oh, there's a lot of unsaved. No. Be careful. There are a lot of saved people amongst those vegans. So let's go. I just put a whole lot down. We've spoken about humanism, Marxism. What is the story of Marxism? The story of Marxism is socialism that says the big problem is business, the top end of town, that rob and pillage, and they do horrible things to us as workers. We should not tolerate it. We should stand up against it. It's the story of labor, the Labor Party. And you say, no, let's just be really, really clear. And now it looks as though Anthony Albanese will come in as the head of the opposition. That's where he comes from, is a very socialistic trend, okay? And we can have that debate later. Feminism we spoke about. Agnosticism. Agnostics, in other words, is that this is about science and logic. It's not about, there's no God. I mean, let's get rid of that. Existentialism. Existentialism is, I exist, therefore I am. Okay? And I think, therefore I am. And sometimes I want to say, well, you don't think, and therefore you aren't. I don't know quite how that logic works. But anyway, materialism. Materialism is a huge one. It's absolutely massive. Go and look at the shopping center next door. And when people come, whenever we have any of the guys coming through that are visiting, I always pull up at the shopping center. And they say, what are we looking at? I said, it's our biggest competition in town. And they go, where? Where? I go, right in front of you. It's our biggest competition in town. Guaranteed, whatever our attendance is here, it's going to be at least 100-fold at that church next door within 2 hours. It's huge. It's huge. Individualism, we've spoken about. Let's move on. So, in terms of that, this leads us to a worldview. And the worldview asks 4 questions. Who am I? It asks, where am I? What is wrong? And how can it be fixed? Who am I? Where am I? What is wrong? And how can it be fixed? And so these I've shown you before. I'm going to run through them pretty quick so that you can get an idea. So let's go through those, and it's small writing. I'm going to read it to you. Hopefully you can see a little bit. Who am I? From a digital lens. And so a digital lens is a worldview that many of our young adults have now. In other words, is they live in a digital age. On the phones, all the time. And I mean, we bemoan the fact as much as we want to. You know, Sharon and I went to a restaurant. We had our little romantic time. It was so lovely. And 14 or 15 girls came in and had a long table quite close to us. And when I saw them coming in, they were all about kind of 14, 15. I kind of thought, oh, this is our little romantic moment. And now you've got a whole lot of loud girls. I don't know that this is great. They arrived. They were busy for 5 minutes, loud, chatter, chatter. And then it died down. We turned around and looked. All 14 of them were on their phones. They were sitting around the table, and they're all on their phones. It's a digital era, and they're busy paying for this privilege. I was like, kind of save yourself, you know, get Maccas and go and sit on the beach and then text. I mean, surely you can, don't pay lots of money, you know, you're wasting. Anyway, it shows my age, doesn't it? Okay, digital lens, this digital lens that we have now. Who am I? I'm a highly connected individual who's free to construct alternative identities via digital representations of myself. Where am I? I'm living in a world of infinite technological possibilities, mass information, and unlimited connectivity. I want to tell you, I work in a school. You could burn the school down. People would be okay with it. You have major problems in the school. No biggie. Let the internet go down for 3 minutes. I want to tell you, the school goes into meltdown. It is like a catastrophic disaster. It is as though the world has come to an end. It's just, you have parents breathing down your neck. I mean, you could literally beat their kids to an inch within an inch of their life. Makes no difference. Don't care. Cut off their internet for 3 minutes and the world will come to an end. My problem, people place expectations and relational demands on me that I don't wish to be bothered with. And so my solution is I'll use technology to mediate between me and reality. I'll choose via devices what information I will engage with, what people I will relate to, and when, and I'll use technology to create my identity. It's a worldview. It's a worldview, and it's very, very common in the world that we find ourselves in. Sharon and I had friends, and they came. They were so unhappy staying with us. Not with us, let me clarify. They were just unhappy with life. Just, it was a hard time in their life. They were going through challenges, problems, just unhappy. Just really, really unhappy. From here, they had to go to the East Coast, and they went to the East Coast. When they got to the East Coast, they started posting stuff on Instagram. Sharon and I were just gobsmacked. We were saying, they're having the best time on the East Coast. They had such a terrible time with us, but they're having such a great time there. We're kind of almost a little offended, you know? Just like this is, and they were, I mean, it was just out partying, pictures, selfies. It was phenomenal. Then they came back here. Guess what they said when they got back? We had the worst time on the East Coast. Couldn't stand it. It was absolutely terrible. We couldn't wait to get out of there. Like, what? Just scroll up and, like, oh, what's this picture here? Yeah? Because of the digital lens. Okay, let's go. What about the Hollywood lens? And I've just taken a couple just to show you the most prevalent ones in our society today. Who am I? I'm an autonomous captain of my own identity. Yep, heard that before. Where am I? I'm living in an exciting world that is full of potential for people to thrive and become something. My main problem is sometimes I don't try hard enough. A lack of ambition results in failure and worthlessness. And my solution? I need to dream big and be committed to my ambitions, unleash my talent and potential. And with commitment and drive, I can make it and be a big success. And that, my friends, is almost 95 to 99% of our young adults today. Let's go with the atheist naturalist lens. And in our nation, this is a very, very prominent one. Who am I? I am a highly evolved animal. I've been programmed by evolution to seek my own survival. Where am I? I'm living in a valueless, neutral world. In fact, the physical world is all there is. It is a world where only the fittest will survive. Goodness and evil are just illusions. And the main problem is religion, faith, and superstition thwart the inevitable triumph of reason. And my solution, I will believe, trust, and place my faith in science and reason. And so you hear a lot of that being spoken about now. We will believe in science and reason. We're not going to go for that faith gumph as though they're on two separate ends of the spectrum. Let's go, a biblical worldview. The biblical worldview is anchored in a biblical story. In other words, there is a Bible story that shapes and fashions us. And for us, this is a huge part of it, is that we believe in a creation. We believe that God created good, that things went horribly wrong in a fall, that there is a redemptive story, and that there is a restoration that is to come. And that little model helps us is to be able to think through things, is to be able to say, what does this look like? So who tells these stories? Who tells these stories and why do we believe them? Come on, time for you to give me. Who tells these stories? Somebody had one. Sorry? Pastors tell the story. Absolutely. Absolutely. Who else tells the story? The media tells the story. Yeah, very, very powerful. I mean, if you hear what the statistics are now in terms of our exposure to advertising, for example, is just absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Media is a huge part. What else do we have? Who tells the story? Sorry? Our parents tell the story. Yeah, yeah, very, very strongly. We hear that. The Bible itself tells a story. Yes, yes, very true. Google tells a story. Huge, 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 huge. It's, I mean, for teachers now, especially in secondary, it's a real challenge to teach because kids are busy fact-checking you on Google all the time as you're busy speaking and correcting you as you're busy going. Yeah, huge. What else? Politicians tell a story. Yep, very, very much so. What other stories are being told? What other stories do we hear? Sorry, celebrities tell a story. Isn't that a huge one? Celebrities now are telling stories. Yeah. Individual Christians are telling a story. Yes, yes. Yep, yep, yep. So, in terms of the story, how much story are we hearing? Can I take a guess? My guess is, on average, 10 minutes a day on the biblical story, and 18 hours on the unbiblical story? That's my guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Let's say it is 1 hour for every Christian is listening to the biblical story. 12 hours with an unbiblical story. So what does that story look like? What does that story look like? If we had to say, so what do we think when we say God's beautiful creation? What comes to mind? If I had to say to you, God's beautiful creation. For me, that's what comes to mind. I love that picture. It's tranquility. It's beauty. There's a warmth in the foreground. Snow on the mountains in the back. That's God's beautiful creation. Maybe that's what your God's beautiful creation is. Kind of an autumn. Leaves are falling. Path going into the forest. Perhaps that's what it is. Perhaps that's what it is. Just this lovely, lovely beach. Tranquility. God's beautiful story. But what about some of the other God's beautiful stories? What about a couple with a baby? You watch Jubes and Christy with their little one. Isn't that God's beautiful creation? Isn't that lovely? What about justice? What about our legal system? Is that God's beautiful creation? What about an artist painting? Is that God's beautiful creation? What about drama and acting? Is that God's beautiful creation? What about music and making music? Is that part of God's beautiful creation? What about couples walking in a field, loving each other? Is that God's beautiful creation? What about medicine and making medicine? Is that part of God's beautiful creation? What about politics? Is politics part of God's beautiful creation? What about the other side of politics? Is that God's beautiful creation? Oh. What about the perversions of God's beautiful creation? What do we do with that? Because a minute ago we said medicine is part of God's beautiful creation, but there's a perversion of it. Does that take away from God's beautiful creation? No, there's a fall. What about prostitution? Is that part of God's beautiful creation? No, you see, for all of the perversions, there's a beautiful thing. God created sex. Some of you have just gone, I cannot believe that he said that in a church. God created sex, but the perversion of it is a horrible thing. What about human trafficking? God created employment, but his intention was never for us to have human trafficking. Plantinga says this. He says, the whole world belongs to God. The whole world has fallen. And so the whole world needs to be redeemed. Every last person, place, organization, and program. All rocks and trees and skies and seas. In fact, every square inch, as the theologian Abraham Kuyper has said. And so for us, our role is not about being better. It's not about being kinder. It's not about being harder working. It's not about being the most gentle. It's about the redemption story that we're busy with. In other words, our worldview needs to be shaped around, I am part of his redemptive processes. Whether I'm a dentist that is trying to sort out somebody's teeth and bring about a redemptive or restoration process, or whether I'm a person working in an office or teaching children, I'm bringing about God's redemptive purposes. And this is the main slide that I wanted to get to for the day. So how do we live in the world that we find ourselves in? And our worldview is going to determine this. Can I suggest to you four different options? And I want to say that there are a whole heap of others, but I want to run through the four quickly. Number one is that we separate ourselves. And the little funnel is to show a coffee grind. I couldn't find any other one where there's a filter in that says the coffee runs through, but the grind stays behind. And to separate means, and I grew up like this in the church. In the church that I got saved into and grew up in, they quoted the scripture often. Come apart and be ye separate, says the Lord. In other words, is you need to seclude yourself. Do not have any part to play in that world. You need to be separate. I went over to the U.S. I told you about the story a little while ago. And one of the schools that we went to go and visit and spent the majority of our time, we were talking about worldview, worldview, worldview. And I started realizing, hold on a moment, I'm using worldview and they're using worldview, but we're talking about two different things completely. And so I said, tell me what worldview is. What does it mean to you? And they said, it means that God created the earth, but that there was a fall and everything went wrong. And I said, and? And they said, that's all there is. It all went wrong and we should have nothing to do with what went wrong. And I said, wow, that's a worldview. These are Christians. They're busy teaching kids this stuff. And there is an outworking of that. So guess what the outworking was, for example, is they would have kids around and they would have a prayer meeting and they would pray with those kids. And the kids would tell us, you know what? Sometimes we pray until 2 o'clock in the morning. And then the Spirit of God comes down. And we all start to sing, and it's wonderful. And we love those evenings. And the next question was, and does the Spirit ever come down when you're playing sport? And they went, no. And we said, oh, this school is known for rock climbing. Does the Spirit ever come down when you go on a rock climbing trip? And they looked at us as though we were stupid. No. You see, because the Spirit only comes down when you're in a room and you're praying at 2 o'clock in the morning. He doesn't come down when you're doing your everyday work. That's secular. It's separate. Second one is we must tolerate it. I mean, this world is evil, it's terrible, and we should just tolerate. What can you do? You can't change everything. You cannot be the one who's preaching and criticizing all the time. You're going to have to tolerate it. And so I've told you my story of tolerance, and I'm not going to tell it again. We need to tolerate it. We just need to tolerate, be a lot more tolerant. As Christians, we can be so intolerant. We must tolerate a lot more. Or the third option is we must accept. We must say, the reality is this is a fallen world. It's broken, and we're going to have to accept it. And so we're going to have to mingle in, and we're going to have to try and make. You see, it's offensive when we live a different life, is try to go unnoticed as much as you possibly can. And some of you may have come out of a church like this, and forgive me if I'm being offensive, but some churches have taken on this view and have called it seeker sensitive and said when people come into our church, they should never feel uncomfortable. So we must just be wary of praying. We must be wary of the songs that we choose. Certainly don't have any of the move of the Spirit. Don't do any of those things, because for people who are coming in from the world, that is uncomfortable. We must try to become a place where they feel comfortable and there's not a major step that they take when they come into the life of the church. Or we're going to say, actually, our call is to engage the world. In other words, is that this world that we live in is a world that we should engage in. Jeremiah said, because at the time the prophets, so go and read Jeremiah, it's a very interesting book, because the prophets were all saying, listen, we're in exile, guys. We're only going to be here for a little while. Keep yourself separate. You're going to work for them. You have to be tolerant of them, but keep separate. Live your own life. We need to kind of almost build a wall around who we are. Keep our own identity. And Jeremiah stands up and he says, guys, those are false prophets. I want to tell you they're false prophets. Here's what God says. We're going to live here for another 70 years. You go and live amongst them. Find yourself a wife. Work. Own a business. Run a business. You need to get stuck in. You need to engage with this culture where they're at and bring about a redemptive purpose of God. I want to say this thing for me, and that's why it's the central part of what I wanted to say today. For us as Christians, and you know what? I am so ashamed and embarrassed to tell you this today, is when the elections came around, I was very, very tempted to go for the separate. Because the threat was huge. It was going to affect me and my job. It was going to affect the school where I work. And so for me, I wanted to go into shutdown, batten down the hatches. We're going to try and survive. We're going to survive. That's all I'm thinking about. How are we going to survive? But this tells me, no, hold on a moment. That worldview needs to be challenged. If my worldview is one of being separatist, if my worldview is being tolerant, if my worldview says that I should just accept everything that there is, there's something that has gone fundamentally wrong in the lens that I'm busy wearing. Because the lens should be, I'm engaging in the world and bringing about a redemptive purpose, whether it's in a school or in politics or in business or in the arts. Before I go to Romans chapter 12, Jesus tells the story. He says, I want you to go and be salt and light. I want you to be salt and light. He doesn't say, listen, hold on a moment. That food is stinking terrible. You need to leave it alone. Don't do anything. He says, no. I want you to become the seasoning in that very thing. So I want you to become the salt that makes it tasty. I want you to become the thing that changes the dish completely. Get stuck in. Romans chapter 12, Paul writes and he says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed. Be transformed. Be transformed. That word transformed is the same word that we hear about when Jesus was on the mountain and he was transfigured. Same word. Transformed, transfigured. Be transfigured by the renewing of your mind. Then and only then will you be able to test and approve what God's will is. His good, pleasing, and perfect will. And when people ask me, Mark, I don't know what God's will is. I'm not sure of God's will. I'd love to know God's will for me. I'm always back to Romans chapter 12. Please be transformed in your thinking. Be transfigured. Go through a process of metacognition. In other words, that we think about how we think. Colossians chapter 2 says this. So then, just as you received Jesus Christ as Lord, continue to live your lives in Him, rooted and built up in Him, strengthened in the faith as you were taught, and overflowing with thankfulness. See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the elemental spiritual forces of this world rather than on Christ. And for us, we live in a world where there are deceptive philosophies that depend on human tradition and elemental spiritual forces. And I want to say, for us, we're going to have to, in this modern world, engage with metacognition, think about how we're thinking. And we need this process to be able to say, oh God, help me to think differently in the world that I live in. Let me move towards the end and speak about this cross-shaped lens. If the lens, the worldview, is the worldview that helps me to interpret the world, let's go and talk about a cross-shaped lens. The cross-shaped lens says, who am I? It says, I've been made by the sovereign creator, God, in His image to reflect glory back to Him and to care for His creation. I am not random and without purpose. And when that identity can override everything that tries to tell me who my identity is, the world will tell us constantly, your identity is with the clothes that you wear, the job that you have, the car that you drive, the people that you're mixing with. I want to suggest to you, this is our identity first and foremost, and we have to settle that thing. And can I also suggest that most of our problems come out of this mistaken identity? Secondly, is where am I? I'm living in a world created by God. His creation is beautiful, majestic, intricate, and profoundly good. This not only includes waterfalls, nebula, and the instincts of platypi, but cultural elements like family, music, justice, innovation, leadership, and I could go on and on and on. What is the main problem? The main problem is the pinnacle of God's good creation. His people have not trusted in His goodness, provision, and lordship. This has resulted in a damaged relationship, and a distortion in the good order of creation. Death now plagues His people and the creation. So what's the solution? If that's the problem, and we need to be very clear on the problem, because if the problem becomes you and I, we're in for trouble. In other words, if I see that as the problem, in other words, is that sin has perverted the world. When Sharon and I have an argument, I understand that part of that is a sin and a perversion that takes hold of us, either my views or hers, and mostly both of ours, that we have to repent of, and we have to get back to His way of doing it so that we're able to overcome our problems. If I don't have that, Sharon is the problem. And when Sharon is the problem, guess who's right? Yeah, you guessed it. It's me. Obviously, she's the problem. And who needs to come right? Her. It's the breakdown of all relationship. Whether it's a work relationship, whether it's a marriage, whether it's between a parent and a child, wherever that breakdown comes, if it's not rooted in that, it becomes you against me. So what's the solution? In His mercy, God provides the remedy. He enters the creation as a man, Jesus Christ. And in Jesus on the cross, we see the pivot point in all history. Death and broken relationships with His people is dealt with. The distortion and the decay plaguing the creation is dealt with. The resurrection brings reconciliation to relationships and renewal to the creation. And His people are restored to Him and are invited into His big picture project, the full redemption of all things. I want to speak to you today, if you're a parent. I want to say to you that you're entrusting your children every day for 7 hours to a man or a woman who are giving them a lens. Make sure you know who they are. I want to speak to you men. I want to say every day your wife is going out and you leave her for 8 to 10 hours and there are other people who are busy shaping her lens. I want to say to you men, every day, for 18 hours a day, you're awake. And there's somebody who's shaping your lens. Choose who's going to shape your lens. Choose who's going to shape your lens. And I want to say, it's not about shaping a lens once. It's a lens that's being shaped day after day after day. You say, oh, Mark, you're just trying to get us to read our Bibles more. You missed it completely. I want to tell you that the lens will be shaped by reading the Bible. The lens will be shaped in the community you hold. It'll be shaped by the TV programs you watch. It'll be shaped by the conversations you see, you have. It'll be shaped by what you're watching in your private moments on a screen. It'll be shaped by your thought processes as you're busy driving. Your lens will be shaped by the billboard on the freeway. Your lens will be shaped and shaped and shaped every single moment of every single day. And I want to encourage you, take hold of who's shaping your lens. Take hold of it. For me, I am not prepared to sit by idly while other men and other people shape my wife's lens. In my home, I take responsibility for that. When we wake up in the morning, the first thing we do is we have devotions together, and in that time, I help to shape my wife's lens. And you've heard me speaking about, the word says in Ephesians, husbands, wash your wives with the water of the word. That's my responsibility, is to wash my wife. You say, but I'm a single woman, or I'm a single man. Please don't allow that to be the reason why you're not shaping your lens. You shape it. Because when you come and engage the world, you're going to have a shaped lens that is going to help you to do that. It affects every part of our lives because every one of us have a worldview, and God calls us to be transformed in the renewing of our minds so that we think differently about the world we live in. Let's pray.